Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
IIE Financial is an investment advisor representative with Symphony Financial, a registered investment advisor. Charles Fulkerson is an investment advisor representative with IIE Financial and Symphony Financial, LTD Co. Annie Fulkerson is not registered nor affiliated with Symphony Financial. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Symphony Financial. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. IIE Financial does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance.
Listening to Checking In on Finance. Willing the good of a nettle.
Markets are going up. We're back to all-time highs. Job number came in good, but the volume doesn't really seem to care. Welcome, everybody, to Chuckin' Ann on Finance. I'm your host, Chuck Fulkerson. Chuckin' Ann on Finance brought to you by IIE Financial. IIE Financial, willing the good of another. Visit us online, IIEfinancial.com. Call the offices today, 832-953-4998. That's 832-953-4998. I am joined by the much more illustrious than I, as Annie is sitting here next to me, sipping her coffee and relaxing as we are heading into one of the greatest weeks of all time, if you're a homeschool mom. The greatest, and could we talk finances? No. What's the greatest week of all time if you're a homeschool mom?
Spring break. Even as a homeschool mom, you get spring break.
Yeah. I mean, it means you can take a little bit more time. You can relax. You can, as they say, chillax.
A little bit. Even though we're homeschoolers, we are more busy. We are busier. Then
no, I would prefer you to say more busier.
We are busier than I ever thought we would be. So much so that I went old school and hung the paper kitchen calendar in the kitchen like mother used to 30 years ago.
No doubt. I mean, we got the old, like,
every
none of this
single
Outlook,
day.
None of this Outlook crap.
I need to be able to, like, at a glance, see the entire month in front of me on paper. I don't know. It's one
I
of
bet
those
you you're
things.
Not the only my, one. There's I people my, out there that are the same way still.
I think so. I use my phone for just about everything else. But when it comes to seeing my month, I need to.
See,
I need to have that paper.
So what that then forces me to do is I take your calendar and I add it into my Outlook calendar on my phone because I am completely phone driven.
Yeah.
I mean, I need a calendar. Like, even old school. I talked to somebody the other day who still had a date book.
Wow.
Yeah. Still had an old school date book.
I remember when I was an intern working for my father when I was in high school, and he had, like, literally the old school Rolodex. I mean, it wasn't old school then. It was, like, actually what was used.
With, like, business cards stapled in it?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But we are excited about spring break because all of the activities, all the different places that I teach and the kids' activities, like, there literally is nothing on the calendar this week except for the St. Martha Fish Fry.
Yeah,
that's it.
The fish fry. And, well, and baseball. Because we still have baseball.
Baseball
funny.
Practice.
So it's funny, for those of you guys that don't know, I coach our oldest son, Charlie. I coach his baseball team. And he had practice tonight, and we had all of five kids that showed up.
Because it's spring break. Everybody, like, half the team is gone.
Yeah, they're all, like, camping. I talked to
but
one.
Charlie didn't care.
I talked to one mom, and she's like, "Oh, we won't be here on Wednesday. We're going camping." I said, "I don't camp. I glamp. If I'm gonna camp, I'm gonna do it in a glamper."
No, you got. I'll teach you how to camp. We'll go. I'll teach you how we learned when I was a Girl
Scout.
You,
as humans, we evolved past living outside. I don't see a reason to go backwards. As humans, like, why would I want to poop in the woods? I'm just going to throw that out there.
It's liberating.
It's liberating. I will go camping as long as there is a Hyatt Regency included.
Oh, no, it'll be fun. And the boys will love it.
I know.
They'll love sleeping outside.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we had a pretty active day. We went for a couple mile bike run with the kids.
Yeah.
And baseball practice. And then Charlie joined a bunch of 9 and 10 year olds in the cul-de-sac to play another pickup game of baseball,
which was actually cool. You just don't see kids playing anymore, right? I mean, think about that. You don't see kids just outside playing. And what's funny is when you look at it kind of ties back to the market. When you look at the stocks that are the high flying stocks and a lot of the big ones, like stocks like Nvidia, Activision, right? Well, there are a lot of them are video gaming stocks.
Yeah,
it's like a direct correlation to the kids that just don't play outside anymore, which,
you know,
is,
it was interesting,
interesting
with regard to Nvidia. I teach a personal finance class to a bunch of homeschoolers who are high school age, 15 to 18. And their opinion is that Nvidia is a thing of the past.
Really?
Uh-huh. They said it's outdated and they don't find any appeal to Nvidia products.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I find that weird. I'm actually surprised that they know what Nvidia is.
Yeah. Well, we have talked a lot about stocks in this personal finance class. And so we've talked about different companies. And so they're aware of the, you know, the types of products and stuff that are is associated with Nvidia. And they're not impressed anymore. They're over it.
That's so surprising.
What's the chart? Can you pull up the chart?
That the younger generation would say that about Nvidia, because Nvidia is such a high flyer. I mean, when you look at Nvidia, it's kind of the one of the darling stocks of the market. It's gone from, you know, just in the beginning of 2017 to now, it's gone from about $100 a share up to 251 at its high. And so, but I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for what the future buying generations are looking at. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing a slight slowing in momentum. And it's a little bit weaker than the overall market in general. So, you know, as the NASDAQ has put in a brand new all-time high, Nvidia has been unable to capitalize on that.
Yeah, it has.
So just something to consider for those of you that are looking at some of those. So speaking of the market and the NASDAQ getting an all-time high, we come off of a week where the NASDAQ popped up above its resistance. For those of you that use something like the QQQs, which is an exchange traded fund of the NASDAQ, you know, its prior all-time high was about $171 a share. As of Friday, it was closed at $173.16. So popped up new all-time high, which was really good to see. I think a lot of people were kind of waiting on it. So it is still the high flying, the much better index of all of them. The thing that I'm a little bit concerned with, and I still maintain that level of concern, is that we are on, you know, lower volume than the big down days. Now, we did have higher volume on Friday than we did on Thursday. So being up the percentage that we were with higher volume after a pivot is a good sign. And this is, you know, considered a follow through day by a lot of investors. When you have a day that's that percentage higher, 1.9% higher, that's what we were on Friday, with higher volume, that's considered a follow through day. And typically those are strong bullish indicators going forward.
But looking at that volume, even though it popped up, it's still half the volume that it was on the huge bearish day that was about 50% larger of a drop.
Yeah. And that's really what scares us. What scares me right now in looking at the markets is, you know, who moves there's two distinct groups, right? There's the retail traders and investors, mom and dad investors. And then there's the banks and the institutions. And when we see volume on Friday, I mean, our volume on Friday was at about 38 million shares. We had about 38 million shares on Friday. To give you some comparison, on, you know, one of the big market drop days, we had 118 million shares of volume. So almost four times the volume, three times the volume, on those big down days than we had yesterday. But it was an increased volume. It was the highest volume of the prior week, and every one of those days was an up day. So overall, that's considered a follow-through day. We should be able to see that thing keep running higher. I'm not saying that right now is considered a buy point. You might wait for a little bit of a pullback down to back around 170 in that range in the NASDAQ before you're super excited about it. The S&P has not been performing quite as well. The S&P is not back above its all-time high. It's significantly lower, if you will, than its all-time high. So the S&P was an all-time high of 2873, and right now we're at 2786. So still almost 100 points lower in the S&P. The Dow Jones also lower than its all-time high. The Dow Jones got to about 26,000 right now. On Friday, we closed at about 25,336. So the Dow is actually the weakest of all of our markets, and the Dow being the weakest of all the markets is something that should give people a little bit of pause. But the Dow.
But at the same time, though, isn't there talk about pulling? Is it GE out of the Dow and replacing it?
There is. So there's definitely talk about pulling GE out of the Dow. Now GE sitting at $14.94 a share right now, but GE last year was at $32.50 a share. So it's like it's dropped 50%. And one of the things that I tell people is, do you think GE is going out of business? If you don't think GE is going out of business, then there's still, this could be a good chance to acquire lots of GE. If you think GE is going out of business, then certainly don't do that. But this is where we start to look at what's your plan, right? What's your plan? As the market goes up and we are back to, and we do, get back to these all-time highs, how long can those all-time highs go? And you, as an individual investor, if you don't know what your exit point is, if you don't know when do I get out for profit or when do I get out if there's a loss, then you have no plan. And whether it's GE or the NASDAQ or the S&P or the Dow Jones or all these different things, the key is knowing what's going to be my investment strategy if it doesn't go my way. Because it's not if the market falls another big percentage, it's when. And it's how you react to that that's going to dictate, what your retirement may look like or what your investment or portfolio is going to look like. So if you don't know what your plan is or you want to learn a little bit more, give the office a call, 832-953-4998. We can help you kind of design a plan that fits your needs, because I think understanding your needs is where every single thing, it's the name of the game, and it's where everything starts. So let's turn the gears a little bit. Let's turn the gears and turn our attention to news. I love the way we say news. News. So anyway, we're going to start off our news with the news of the weird, 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 weird. All right, our news of the weird today. So speaking of news, how fast can we get our news?
As fast as your internet provider can carry it.
Right. I mean, and frankly, that's pretty fast, right? It's like sending a message, right? If I send a message to you, it goes at the speed of light minus a little bit of time for the friction of the copper and the wires,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a quick, quick message. Well, let's go back a little bit in time.
Well, think about last night when we were logging in to watch Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on the Roku.
That's right? A good point.
And you had to log in
the activation code.
With the activation code. And no sooner did you hit send than on the TV screen, bang,
it popped up.
It just popped up.
Yeah. And I don't know how many different synapses have to be firing in the intrawebs in order for that to happen. And I know none of those words make any sense in that sentence. I don't know how many of those, but I'm sure it's a lot, right? But let's think about the history of sending messages for a minute, because I think this is a big deal. Now we have instantaneous, text messages. Like, does anybody ever even call on the phone anymore? You think about your friend. You talk to your sister, once a month? But you text her, 12,000 words a month? Something like that?
Yeah.
Easily. But you talk on the, I'm like, have you talked
to your sister? It's a very healthy relationship.
I'm like, have you talked? It is a healthy relationship. You guys are great. But I'm like, have you talked to your sister lately? And you're like, yeah. I'm like, actually spoken? No, we texted. But instantaneous message, right? That's what we have. But before that, remember this? This is old school. you actually had to pick up a telephone. And that telephone was attached to a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Attached to a wall. Before that, let's go before that, you had a telegraph. And they could send a wire, right? Before that, right? If you wanted to send messages across oceans, how'd you do it?
Letter.
Yeah, send it in a letter. Well, one way you could do it was you could send it in a bottle.
Message in a bottle.
Oh, really?
I had to go there.
Oh,
this story just had to, it was screaming.
Message in a bottle. I forgot about that. Who is that? Sting?
Sting, I think.
You yeah. sound just like him, I gotta tell you.
With my cold and everything.
Yeah, yeah. You sound just like Sting. But anyway, so our new story of the weird comes from the Huffington Post, and it was, it says, Australian woman discovers a message in a bottle sent in 1886.
Yeah, how cool is that?
This was a message in a bottle that she discovered that washed up on shore about 100 miles north of Perth, Australia, which for those of you that are interested, Perth, Australia is the world's largest, most remote city. Farthest away from pretty much anything else.
I didn't know that.
It is. But about 100 miles north of Perth, she found a bottle with that matched the writing of a captain's log of a German ship from 1886.
Yeah, when they interviewed her, she said they were, she and her husband or something, they were walking along the beach and she, there was a whole bunch of trash on the beach and she randomly decided to pick up a bunch of that trash just to see, like to collect it, bring it home and see if anything happened to be in it. And she stumbled upon this over 100-year-old bottle from a German captain.
I mean, think about that. So it had to have, and where did this come from? Well, because back in the day, this is how the German Navy was using this to assess currents.
Currents, yeah.
And what they did was they asked anybody who found one of these bottles to respond back. So she tried to respond back and found out that, I don't think whoever wrote that is alive anymore.
Probably not.
Possibly their great, great, great grandchild is still alive.
That's possible. It was neat, though. Like, there wasn't a cap on the bottle, and yet the ink on the message actually remained intact, so much so that you can actually look at it. It's really pretty amazing. We should throw a link to this up on Twitter so you can see it. It's really neat. And they analyzed the handwriting and everything and were able to determine that the captain had filled out one of these forms, put it in with like their latitude and longitude and his name and the name of the ship and everything, and put it in a bottle and threw it overboard, and then also put it in their navigation log. So it matched, you know, there were two.
Take that, Google.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. But apparently this is like not a one-time occurrence sort of thing. Like the German Navy had them do it, had all these captains do it a lot. And, yeah. And it was their way to measure and study ocean currents.
I think it's cool. So let's go from one extreme to the other. So here is another headline that we can talk about. And this is from MarketWatch. Elon Musk says SpaceX Mars rocket may make first flight as soon as next year.
Yeah, and it may take as long as that bottle took from 1886 to be
just to get
discovered
there.
In 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was a conference in Austin, Texas.
Not too far away.
Yeah, where Elon Musk was talking about some of the different things, and he had a pretty cool announcement.
Yeah, he announced his Mars plans last year, and Musk said he aimed to land cargo shipments on Mars by 2022. Followed by the first, he called them colonists, you know.
Well, they would be colonists.
Yeah, colonists.
Colonizers?
Yeah. Well, there's no one there, so I assume they are colonists. Musk said Sunday that life will not be easy for the first Martians. And as, what's his name?
I don't know. I don't know.
In the movie, Life on Mars, you know, The Martian? The guy from Good Will Hunting. I'm having a brain aneurysm.
You mean
here.
Just
I can't remember.
Mars?
No, the movie that we just watched.
I got nothing.
From the, oh my gosh. All right.
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. That's who I'm talking about. He demonstrated how hard life on Mars was going to be.
No, he had potatoes.
He grew potatoes.
He was fine. That's been proven, by the way, that you can't grow potatoes in the Martian soil.
But they are in the Arizona desert trying to simulate life on Mars and trying to see what they can actually grow.
Yeah. Difference is that the Arizona desert has more nutrients in the soil. And so you could actually grow potatoes.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, because the big Falcon rocket had such
huge success.
Yeah. Huge success that he's pretty sure that they can get to Mars a little bit earlier
and cheaper
than they expected.
Which
yeah.
is shocking because nothing in space ends up being cheaper.
No, I disagree with that. Really nothing that's in the government ends up being cheaper.
That's true.
See, it's amazing how much faster technology is progressing when it's taken out of the hands of the federal government. But that's a story for another podcast.
Yeah.
At another time. So, but I think this one's kind of interesting. Interestingly enough about the stock, right? Tesla. So there is no SpaceX stock at the moment yet, but Tesla is one of those ones. It's a $327 stock. I'll be interested to see if we get a pop-up in Tesla, if Tesla pops on some of the SpaceX announcements. But Tesla,
it's really just been basing sideways for literally a year.
For a year, it's been around $325 a share. Got up as high as $389, got as low as about $300, but it's sitting around $325. That's kind of the fair price area. But when you look at Tesla, we'll talk maybe later today in our education segment, we'll talk about fundamentals and earnings and really what that means. But Tesla has had negative earnings for 5 consecutive quarters. And it's had negative earnings for 14 of its last 15 quarters. So Tesla's bleeding money, but the stock is still going up because where it's losing money is in R&D. And this really is an interesting lesson for investors, is that a company that's losing money in an R&D phase and that there is a bright future is something to be interested in. You know, I just look at our neighborhood, and our neighborhood flooded. And so a lot of people in our neighborhood lost their cars. Have you noticed how many Teslas are driving around our neighborhood recently?
Yeah.
There's a lot. Because I think cars last today longer than they ever have, if they're taken care of. And I think that that's really what's slowing the growth of Tesla in the marketplace. But when Tesla comes out with its more... I'll call it a consumer-friendly price point with, and I forget the name of the model, but they plan on coming out with a more consumer-friendly price point. It's going to put all the other hybrids and electric cars, in my mind, completely, it's going to blow them out of the water. And that's really where I think you could see explosive growth in the stock in terms of fundamentals. Doesn't mean, by the way, that the stock price will go rocketing up, but the fundamentals may turn around and we may start to see some consistent growth and earnings in the stock itself.
Well, and sometimes too, people are, depending on the type of investor you are, some people are strictly value investors and they're looking at that earnings per share and seeing which stocks are undervalued.
Right.
You know, and I think with a growth company like this, companies have a life cycle to them. You know, they're startups and then they're growth and then they reach maturation. And I think that SpaceX and Tesla are one of those. Definitely they're in their growth phase. And so there it may not be the exact, right time to buy necessarily based on fair price areas, because in our line of work, we look at both things.
Right.
But if you are looking at it from, a value investing standpoint, it might be something that, for investors to look at.
Sure. And that's the thing to look at. It's trading at ridiculously high multiples times earnings because it's got no earnings, right? So when you look at where the S&P is trading times earnings, then you can see the relative, is a stock a good value or not. Right now, Tesla's not a value play in any way. Right. There's no value being built in Tesla because it's got no earnings to go off of. But I think what would be great is for us to take a little bit of time and dive into what the market fundamentals are, because fundamentals do play an important role as an investor. And when you understand how fundamentals go, then it can help you to make a much more solid plan. So, we'll talk a little bit about fundamentals and how fundamentals can help you make decisions in your investments. Let's talk fundamentals and why should you care, right? So why should an investor care much about fundamentals if they're going to invest in individual companies? And we've talked about this on the show before. For every investor to invest in individual companies, it doesn't always make sense. Most of, you know, most of the investors that we talk to, they're not always jumping towards an individual company as much as they're looking for a maybe like an ETF, right? An exchange traded fund or something along those lines, because an ETF is going to give you access to a lot of different companies and it's going to be a lot more versatile, right?
Yeah, you get a lot more diversity if you are investing in an ETF, but depending on a particular investor's goal and plan, you may want to look at individual stocks, just recognizing that individual stocks put you at, you have more what's called business risk with an individual stock.
Yeah. I mean, you've got more business risk with an individual stock because, you know, and we've talked about Tesla and, you know, what if, and I'm not saying he did, by the way, but what if Elon Musk decided to go out and he got in a tremendous amount of trouble, right? And the company then suffers because of some of the mistakes that maybe he's making, right? Things like that. And I'm not saying he is, but you take on more business risk, right? There's three levels of risk, if you will. There's overall
systemic
systemic risk that the whole market's going to fall apart. There's sector risk that the sector that you're in is going to fall apart. And then there's actual business risk, company risk, that the individual company is going to fall apart. When you invest in an individual stock, you take all three layers of risk. When you invest in an ETF, typically you only take one or two of those layers of risk. So you reduce that risk. But many of you are going to be individual stock investors anyway. And a lot of people, the reason that, you know, what the biggest reason that people want to invest in an individual stock is very simple.
Dividends.
It's dividends. They want to get the yield that the individual stock is going to pay them. And oftentimes that comes because maybe they worked for a company, which is a publicly traded company, right? We live in Houston, Texas. Most every single person I know somehow works with oil and gas. Almost everybody I know is in some way related to oil and gas, whether it's Chevron, whether it's Exxon, whether it's Baker Hughes, whether it's, you know, NRG, whether it is Noble. There's so many different companies that are in some way touched.
And all the supporting industries as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Service industries.
Right. And then our friends who own like a pipeline, you know, repair company or things like that. So, but when we look at an individual company, what are we looking at? Well, in real estate, there's one thing that matters in real estate. And you hear people say it over and over again, right?
Location.
That's it, right? In real estate, it's all about location. In the market, it's earnings. It's all about earnings. So let's start at the very beginning, right? There's two types of companies. There's privately held companies and there are publicly traded companies. Privately held companies don't have to release any of their information to you at any time, right? They've only got to release it to their investors when their investors want that information. So a privately held company that is maybe financed by private equity would release its information to the people that need to get it, right? You're on a need to know basis. But a publicly traded company, their earnings, their results are all for the world to see because anybody can become an investor in a publicly traded company. So that allows us to really see the earnings and compare the earnings that they have. So what are earnings? Very simple. Earnings are the profits. That's what they are. The profits that the company makes. Now, earnings are reported in a dollar per share basis, just like the company share price is in a dollar per share basis. So give you an example. ExxonMobil on Friday closed at 117.22, right? So 117.22. Now, ExxonMobil has 1 billion. I said ExxonMobil, I meant Chevron. I'm sorry, Chevron. Chevron has 1 billion 910 million shares outstanding. So if you want to know the size of the company, you've got to multiply the current stock price, which is 117.22, times 1.9 billion. That's big. That's a big company.
That's
right?
Kind of big.
So now those numbers are called the market cap. Market cap. So the market cap of ExxonMobil is approximately $224 billion. That's the market cap of Chevron. I don't know why I keep saying ExxonMobil. The market cap of Chevron is $224 billion. It's a humongous company. Well, when it reports earnings in an earnings per share EPS. So the EPS, or earnings per share, of the company will tell you what the company is doing and how it's performing. So I'll give you a good example. They recently had an earnings report, and the earnings report that they had was on February the 2nd. Now, their earnings estimate was to make $1.30 per share. Their actual number was $1.64 per share. So how much money is that? $1.64, 1.64. Well, in order to know that number, you've got to multiply it times the number of shares outstanding. So I'm not good at math, but there's about 2 billion shares outstanding. The earnings were $1.64. So they made over $1 billion in a quarter. Woohoo! And the stock price went down. And the stock price went from 133 and now it's at 117. Why? Well, because the stock price and the earnings don't necessarily have to be really related to one another. But as a long-term investor, the earnings are something you do want to pay attention to. So a stock price that's come down pretty hard on a company that has better than expected earnings growth, and they, you know, they're looking at fairly strong guidance, then we then might want to look at the fundamentals to see if fundamentally it's a good company, which will then tell us if it's a good opportunity to buy it, right? Now, a great way to do this is to compare companies.
But not necessarily when to buy it.
Right, not when to buy it, right? That's really where we look at the fair price value areas. But when we look at the companies, we can start to compare companies that are in the same sector. Like, for example, ExxonMobil, which is also in the same sector as Chevron, also recently released earnings. They both released earnings. ExxonMobil on their earnings change was down 4%, right? They lost four. They were 4% lower than they were for their prior quarter. So ExxonMobil.
Right. And earnings are usually released every quarter.
Right.
By companies.
Yeah. Earnings released once a quarter. So people know. So ExxonMobil was down 4% in their earnings while Chevron was up 159%. So what does that tell you right there about the momentum of the company? The 3-year EPS growth rate for Chevron is flat. So Chevron has flat earnings growth over 3 years, whereas ExxonMobil over 3 years has a negative 24% earnings per share growth rate. Those numbers should tell you some pretty interesting stories about these companies, right? Now, ExxonMobil pays a slightly higher dividend. They got a slightly higher dividend at
only by about 3.3%.
Yeah, 4.1% is the dividend yield for ExxonMobil, whereas Chevron is 3.8%. So when I look at the fundamentals of the companies, fundamentally, Chevron is a stronger company with a more robust portfolio, if you will, results of the most recent quarter, right? The most recent couple of quarters. Now, the market caps are very different, whereas ExxonMobil is a $316 billion company, right? $316 billion company. Chevron's only $224 billion. By the way, anytime you're talking in billions with a B, that's really big. Mm-hmm. But Chevron is, you know, ExxonMobil is almost 30% larger, if you will, than Chevron when it comes to market cap. They've got more shares because they have almost 4 billion shares outstanding, whereas Chevron has less than 2 billion shares outstanding. So more outstanding shares in ExxonMobil means that they still had a positive earnings number, right? Their earnings number was still a positive earnings number, but the positive earnings number that they had, even though it was positive, was lower than it had been the prior three quarters before.
So when the average investor is looking at this or is working with us to develop a plan, right, for their portfolios, how would they use something like earnings per share and the fundamentals of a company to actually decide whether or not they wanted to invest in an individual stock?
Well, I will tell you, there's one thing that I like to look at, and I like to look at the EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, EBITDA. And EBITDA is the, see, what are the things that will either help a company or hurt a company, right? If you look at EBITDA, you're comparing apples to apples. And the reason I say that is because certain companies were really, really, really helped by the tax cuts from President Trump. Other companies were not helped at all by the tax cuts from President Trump. But if you take out the interest, the taxes, the depreciation, the amortization, what you then get is the earnings of the company with the cash that they have. And the higher that you can get of an EBITDA, the more efficient that the company is going to be with its capital. So when you're looking at fundamentals, in my mind, the best fundamental to look at is EBITDA. And when you're looking at that EBITDA number, the higher the better, and you want to see that number growing over time. So as an investor, if there's one thing that I would say to look at from fundamentals, it's the EBITDA and knowing what to do with it. So let's turn our attention away from corporations and the market, and let's talk about something that excites everybody. I mean, like, is literally, not figuratively, literally the 94 billionth most exciting thing on the planet. Taxes. Why are you snoring? It ain't that bad.
Oh, wait, what? You said we're going to talk about taxes for the planning segment this week?
Nobody wants to talk about taxes because it's boring.
Nobody wants to listen to taxes either.
No.
All of our listeners just...
Really? They're like, seriously? What is this crap?
Click.
What is... Yeah, it was terrible. But anyway.
And literally, before you hit play, before we started recording this segment, I asked you how we were going to make this interesting. I hope you have tricks up your sleeve because taxes are super boring.
I've got no tricks up my sleeve, but I think it's
important
to look at.
Not to offend any CPAs out there.
Well, and let's start with that right there. Here's what I want to start with. And this is genuinely what I believe. I don't know if you understand this. Those of you at home probably don't know this. I don't even know if you know this, Annie. I'm stubborn.
No, you're not.
You're
not stubborn.
I'm stubborn.
You actually are very fluid and flexible.
I am the least flexible person I know.
Okay, not physically, but...
I can touch my toes as long as I'm sitting down and my knees are bent and there's food near them.
Near your toes?
I'm into fitness. Fitness whole pizza in my mouth.
No.
But anyway, so I remember when we first got married. I don't even think we were married yet. We were still dating. I had always done my own taxes. And you looked at me like I had three heads. Why in the world would you do your own taxes? So before I get into this segment, I want to start off with this. I used to do my own taxes. And I remember one year that I did the taxes like the way I wanted to. And you said, okay, let's figure them out. And then let's send them to the accountant and let the accountant come back with the numbers. And it was not even close how much better off we were paying a professional to do it for us.
Oh, yeah. And I've always been a big believer in like the Henry Ford theory of surrounding yourself with really intelligent people, right?
Then why did you marry me? I would let that out.
I don't know. For your great looks and all your hair that you used to have.
Stop it. Stop it. She's killing me, Smalls.
No, but it's true. Like, you know, Henry Ford is known for... knowing that he didn't have all of the answers, but surrounded himself with all of the people who did have all of the answers. And, you know, we often refer to that as our mastermind group.
Right.
Right. And we have, you know, we don't pretend to be experts. We're, you know, you're an expert on the market for sure, but we don't pretend to be experts on every single aspect of, you know, of the law or taxes or, you know, what have you. So we surround ourselves with those types of experts. And yeah, so ever since we've been married, I've used the exact same accountant and she's the accountant. She's an exceptionally talented CPA and my parents have used her for their personal and business and all that kind of stuff. And so that we do as well.
And so the reason I say this and I start off with this is because we're going to go through, you know, there's some big, it was a really good article in Bloomberg and it talks about some big tax law changes for this filing season. But understand this, I just don't believe anybody should do their own taxes. I really don't. We had somebody doing our own taxes when you worked part-time at a bank and I was a restaurant manager. I mean, those are super easy taxes to do. And, you know, people are like, oh, well, I'll just get TurboTax or I'll file for free online with the 1040 EZ. And that was a mistake because she was able to find things I didn't even know existed. So the first thing I'm going to start off with is we don't give tax or legal advice. I am never going to give tax or legal advice. I'm an investment advisor. That's what I do. Tax and legal, a consultant accountant, right? So the information that I'm going to relay to you is just the stuff that was from this Bloomberg article, but I think it's a really good article for people to take a look at. And so the first one is to preview your 2018 taxes. Because there's a lot of different things you can do. Now, this does talk about the TurboTax TaxCaster tool, which was updated to forecast a 2018 tax refund based on the new law. This is really good because it can help you to figure out what kind of decisions should I make this year. It's really good to have a forecaster that will help you to figure out kind of what decisions that you do this year. Number two, it says that you should look at reworking your withholdings. So when you work at a company, that form that you fill out is the
W-4,
right? Mm-hmm. And when you get hired at a company, you fill that out.
Yeah. And it has that's the form that has all the exemptions on it.
That's exactly right. And then what do you do with it?
You forget about it.
You completely forget about it. So if workers leave their W-4 as is, and they might not withhold enough, which can bring penalties or a smaller than expected tax refund. Workers that are in high tax brackets who get large bonuses could see a higher tax bill next season if they don't tweak those W-4s. And one of the ways that employers can set the withholding rate on things like supplemental income is there's a new flat rate of 22% for supplemental income like bonuses. That I think is pretty interesting. And so I think people should understand how to use it and how to read it. And so look at your W-4s to look about reworking your holdings. Number three on this list, it says watch for SALT workarounds. So the SALT workaround is something that a lot of people have had a big problem with.
It's the state and local income tax deductions. They call it the SALT deductions. And it was a provision Democrats have labeled a war on the blue state Americans. It says that the deduction, which used to be unlimited, will be capped at 10 grand next year.
So a $10,000 limit on state and local income taxes.
And I remember when this was in Congress, states right. Like New Jersey, California, Connecticut, they were really against, and you know, they were really against this, the tax overhaul because, I moved from New Jersey,
right?
I lived in New Jersey my whole life, and my parents moved down from there last year, and property taxes in New York, Connecticut, California, and New Jersey are some of the highest in the entire country. It's outrageous, the taxes that the property taxes that they pay. So they were really, kind of against this because their constituents would be not being able to write off as much of their taxes.
Yeah. And so when you think about it, I mean, I want to say California is at about a 13% state tax at its highest levels. And so if you make, let's say you make $200,000 a year, well, that's 26 grand a year in state taxes, and you can only write off a total of 10. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't even count any of your local income taxes. So you've got a significantly higher, that'll push people into whole new tax brackets in high income tax states, which, by the way, is going to lead to either A, more states with no income tax that are bringing people in, right? Texas has the three largest, essentially the three fastest growing cities in America are Houston, Austin, and Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I think four is San Antonio. I mean, they're growing in leaps and bounds. And I think a large part of that is because
Warm weather and no state taxes.
Warm weather, no state taxes. I mean, the no state taxes is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Now, if you come to Texas and you, because the property taxes are a bit higher, if you live beyond your means and you live in a house that's, you know, bigger than what you need, then you wind up paying just as much, you know, in some instances. So the key here is understand how it's going to do. Now, some states are looking for workaround potentials. So keep this in mind in whatever state you happen to live. Like, some states are talking about using tax credits for charitable donations made to state funds that support areas like education and healthcare. Right? If you think about that, and that's going to be administratively difficult and it may not even be legally feasible. But
I would also say that if you're going to do something like that, you need to really make sure that you know where that money is going, because right. We know that there could be a lot of moral objections to where the state and, you know, and the government sends donations.
Yeah.
So just be aware of that if you have moral objections.
That could be a big deal for a lot of people, because if there are certain things you don't want the government funding, yet you are providing a charitable donation, allow them to fund it kind of wherever they want. So just saying that we're going to fund healthcare, but if you may not support something like Planned Parenthood, or you don't support, you know, whatever it is you choose not to support, but that's where the state funds are going to go, at least then you'll have a choice as to whether or not you choose to donate in that side. Right. So something to consider.
So be aware of that.
Another example, speaking of donations, it says to bunch up your donations. This is kind of interesting. To try to get around the new SALT limit, one strategy advisor suggests for people who regularly donate to charity to bunch that up in 1 year into what they would give over multiple years. So that you have a bigger charitable donation that you can write off, right? If you're going to give a certain amount of money to the church and a certain amount of money to, I don't know, what's the kid one that we donate to? I'm
trying to save the children.
Save the children. Thank you. You're going to give a certain amount of money to the church. You're going to give a certain amount of money to Save the Children. You're going to give a certain amount of money to Children's Hospital. Let's say those three. And let's say every year you give $3,000 to each one. So every year I give $3,000 to the church and $3,000 to Children's Hospital and $3,000 to the to Save the Children, right? Well, if I know I'm going to do that and I have the money and the funds to do it, what if I just donate a bigger amount to each one of those so that and I donate 2 or 3 years worth in order to get that bigger lump sum? And then if you itemize, charitable donations remain deductible on federal returns and can help to lift married taxpayers above the $24,000 standard deduction hurdle. So kind of something to consider. My point behind this is you got to work with a professional. Go find a good tax accountant. Use a professional for advising of taxes, just like you would for an investment advisor and a professional on investments. But the key is, like everything else we say, is to know your plan. So I know we like to talk about commodities on the show, and there's a pretty important trade ban that has just taken effect. And Annie, I think this trade ban is kind of a big deal. Well, maybe not for us.
Yeah, there's a story that came across on PBS.org talking about a trade ban that takes effect in Poland.
Poland has a trade ban.
Poland does.
No more kaputniks for you.
And it has to do with working on Sundays. So their trade ban takes effect soon, and it did it already. And it talks about how they are banning work for 2 Sundays out of the month. In 2019, they will add a third Sunday. And in 2020, they will add all 4 Sundays. So they'll basically go back to honoring Sunday as a day of rest for workers.
So, and I think this is an interesting topic to discuss, because I think that there are ways to see it, you know, a number of ways that you can see this. And I think that if this happened in America, people would lose their minds.
Well, one of the only companies, if not the only company that does it in the United States, is Chick-fil-A, and they're closed
right
on Sundays.
Yeah. So I think that
and they do just fine.
Yeah, they do. No question, because they're busy the rest of the week. But there are certainly people that wonder, like, I will tell you, if Chick-fil-A went public, I don't know how long that would last.
And that's why they don't.
Right. Yeah. So the new rules, they have a $29,000 fine.
Yeah, in U.S. dollars, it's $29,000 fine.
And repeat offenders may face a prison sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for violating it. Yeah.
That's humongous. And so the reason that they're doing this, that it talks about in there, is because the average Polish employee worked a little over 1,900 hours in 2016, according to their statistics. And I mean, they're hardworking citizens in some of the hardest working citizens in the European Union, and complain that some days Sundays are sometimes the only days they have free time to shop. And so a lot of people are upset because they say, well, the only time I have off is on a Sunday to shop. So you ready for this? Begs the question.
No, it does not beg the question.
I know it doesn't. It begs the question, the people that work in the shops, when do they get their days off?
Yeah. And this was created, by the current party, and that's in government right now. And I think I see it from the perspective of how Karol Wojtyła would look at, now we know him as St. John Paul II, or St. John Paul the Great. And what he talked about with respect to the worker and working is that there is dignity in work. We are created to work.
Right.
Right. And we're created in God's image. And God was a worker. So there is dignity that we find in doing work and contributing to society and contributing to our fellow man and cultivating the earth and et cetera, et cetera. But I think that when the merchandise is equated to the worker, such that the worker it becomes a commodity,
right,
almost. I think that it degrades the dignity of the worker. So I almost applaud the government in this situation. It's kind of sad that the government does have to, or did feel the need to, you know, to step in and do this, but I don't know. I mean, I kind of applaud it. Now that's from my Catholic head, right? And then of course I see the other side where it's, well, there's, you know, there are business owners who are trying to stay in business, but I think that there's a limit to how far you can take unbridled capitalism. To the point where humans become commodities. And
sure,
we all know what happens when humans become commodities.
Right.
So, well,
Poland knows a lot about that.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think, though, that in my mind, it is there's freedom in having choice, right? There's freedom in having choice. And I think that to have a government ban on businesses operating on Sunday, to me, it infringes upon the ability to have the choice, if you will. Now, they are allowing small mom and pop shops to stay open, stores at airports and train stations, but the small mom and pop shops can only stay open on the condition that only the owners themselves are going to be the ones working. So there will still be a few things that are open. I just don't necessarily like the government telling us what to do in any form, like, ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's the uncomfortable part of this, is that the government, you know, stepped in. It would have been a lot nicer. Like, the fact that we have stores open on Sundays is a relatively new phenomenon.
Right.
I mean, they pretty much, all stores used to be closed on Sundays anyway, and it was the people's choice to keep their businesses closed. And guess what? The world didn't end.
Right.
So it's unsettling, I guess, that, I mean, I'm always leery when the government takes on a lot of power, you know, and because I believe in a smaller government and leaving things to the people. But at the same time, it's a little bit unsettling when the government does take that type of power into their own hands. This one time, I feel like, you know, I do agree with the government's decision. I don't necessarily agree with the government taking that much power. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like you feel like,
yep,
kind of a rock. You're stuck between a rock and a hard place. It would have been with 90% of the Poland being a Catholic society, it would have been nice if the people just had decided to do this on their own.
Right. If that was something they wanted to do. So I find it interesting, you know, in how it's portrayed. I think it'd be great if you guys give us your thoughts on Twitter.
Yeah.
If you've got something that you want to add to it, follow us at IIE Financial on Twitter and give us your comments. We'll post a link to this article on our Twitter feed, and we'd love to get your comments and your feedback and thoughts on it. So turn our attention a little bit to crude oil. We talk a little bit about crude oil and kind of what's happening in the oil markets. The crude oil markets have really kind of just been chopping around. You know, we got as high as $66 a barrel. We got down to about 58 bucks a barrel. And really, it's been chopping between that 58 and 66 now for the past couple of weeks. You know, it's rallied back up. We closed on Friday at about, you know, last week we closed at 62.21 a barrel. And really, in order for price to get up above that $66 a barrel mark, it's going to take a fair amount of significant movement and a fair amount of significant news. And interestingly enough, there was an article that just came out in the Houston Chronicle. It says another headache for OPEC. Oil fields find new life. So this article came out on, this is actually from, it was in the Houston Chronicles where I found it, but it actually was a Bloomberg article from Sunday, March the 10th. And it's talking specifically about, you know, one of the chief executives for BP said, "I can't remember ever in my career having seen a negative decline rate." And so, you know, what he's saying is, you know, a negative decline rate, right? That's a negative and a negative. It's a double negative, which is a positive, right? You know, so it's like they've gushed more crude with BP's old fields last year. And so having these old oil fields gushing more crude is starting to scare OPEC, because, you know, Swan, you know, the big oil guy for BP, says companies are focusing on the basics. So there was a massive focus on existing wells, because the existing wells are the cheapest and most profitable barrel that a company can access. They don't have to drill it. They don't have to do anything, but they found new technology to pull more oil out of the ground, and they can extract every last drop from mature assets. And by doing that, that's really where you're starting to see OPEC gets a little bit scared when they start to see existing oil fields pumping out more oil. And as that supply increases, there's a good chance that we're going to see the price continue to fall a little bit. So we're, you know, it's already going to be hard to get up above that $66 a barrel mark. I think that if it gets above there, there's room for it to run to 80. That's really my long-term number in oil. But having something like this come up, I think, is pretty interesting, because as the supply exceeds the demand, the price is going to have to fall. That's pretty typical. So just something to keep in mind and kind of keep your eye on. You know, natural gas prices over the past couple of weeks have really been kind of steady. Not a whole lot of movement in natural gas over the past couple of weeks, as we really didn't expect a whole lot of movement with oil kind of jumping around, you know, very lightly. I don't expect natural gas to have too big of a move. Had a pretty big fall early in the year. Was a strong rise up late in the year and then a big fall early in the year. So to basically put us exactly where we were in December as far as price wise. So, you know, that being said, I think you've got oil, you've got nat gas. All of them seem to be holding fairly strong. We're seeing more jobs being added in the oil sector, specifically here in the Houston market. And it's always good to see more jobs being added. And as their profits continue to rise, we may even see some strength in some of those stocks. So, Annie, I think that's about all the time that we have on our show for today. Anything that you want to add before we wrap it up for the day?
No, it's really good fun.
All right. Awesome. So those of you that
made the tax segment, hopefully not too boring.
No, we made it boring. There's no question. It's hard not to be boring when we talk about taxes. So if you guys have any questions, please feel free to reach out, IIEfinancial.com, fill out a contact us form, and we will get back to you, or give the office a call, 832-953-4998. That's 832-953-4998. Thanks so much for listening to Chuck and Anna Finance, and we will be back soon.
IIE Financial is an investment advisor representative with Symphony Financial, a registered investment advisor. Charles Fulkerson is an investment advisor representative with IIE Financial and Symphony Financial, LTD Co. Annie Fulkerson is not registered nor affiliated with Symphony Financial. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Symphony Financial. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. IIE Financial does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance.
Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land gift shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
I learned how many people we could help and how good you feel after you've helped others.
I know Lent is about giving, so I want to give.
These kids are talking about CRS Rice Bowl, a Lenten program known by generations of Catholic families. Children love it because they experience different cultures and gain a lasting impression of the people they are helping. You can bring CRS Rice Bowl into your home and experience the joy of seeing your children or grandchildren find new meaning in Lent. Visit crsricebowl.org to get started.
Rice Bowl inspired me to pray more and to pray for those who are less fortunate.
The Cincinnati Catholic Men's Conference is back. Tickets are on sale now for Saturday, April 28th at the Taft Theater at cincinnatimensconference.com or call 513-214-1534. The speaker conference roster is being hailed as one of the best lineups in the country. In rare appearances, come see Father Mitch Pacwa from EWTN, the man motivator Father Larry Richards, former Moeller High School and University of Notre Dame head football coach Jerry Faust, and the big celebrity keynote, Baz Rutten, UFC world champion, MMA world champ, and movie star. The conference theme is What It Means to Be a True Christian Man in Today's Society. Don't miss the incredible day of motivation, spiritual benefit, and fellowship with men from all walks of life. Get tickets now at cincinnatimensconference.com or call 513-214-1534. That's cincinnatimensconference.com or 513-214-1534. Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.